The Atlanta Immigration Court denies asylum in 98% of its rulings. That's the highest rate of any immigration court in the nation. In collaboration with Emory University, the Southern Poverty Law Center recently found that judges in the Atlanta courts often, quote, disregard legal arguments and standards, fail to provide adequate interpretation services for immigrants, and cancel hearings with little to no notice. And with me to talk about all of this is Lisa Grable, Deputy Legal Director with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also with us is Adelina Nichols. She's executive director with the Georgia Latino Alliance for Human Rights. Welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Also with us is Mary Ellen Fullerton, professor of law at the Brooklyn Law School. Thanks to you as well.
Good morning.
So let's go ahead and start with Lisa at the Southern Poverty Law Center. What was most striking to you about this study that you did in collaboration with Emory?
Well, the Atlanta immigration courts have a reputation nationally for being, the judges have a reputation nationally for being among the worst in the country. So we went into the project knowing what had been written and said about the courts, but it was still striking for the students to observe the kinds of behaviors that they reported during the 7 weeks of their observation, from judges disregarding, for example, the credible fear standard, which is a governing standard for asylum law, to simply not paying attention, staring at the ceiling for some 23 minutes while an asylum applicant explained his story. We were surprised by what we saw.
When we talk about these folks asking for asylum, what types of cases are we talking about? Adelina, what's a typical asylum request case that we might see in a court like this?
The people from coming from Central America or even from Mexico, some of these states are very violent, and they are looking always for an exit of that violent state, and they cross the border. They request the asylum, and that's the result at the end doesn't have a good result.
Yeah, what happens when people get deported back to violent places?
With many instances, people could be threatened or could be as well killed by because they don't have another place to go but to go back, so they can be killed as well.
So as we said, what we know about the Atlanta court, immigration court, is that 98% of cases in which people are asking for asylum get rejected. Let me go to Mary Ellen Fullerton up at the Brooklyn Law School. Put that number in context for us. How does the Atlanta immigration court compare to other courts around the country in this regard?
Well, the Atlanta court is a real outlier. I think nationwide we're in the range of 40% to 50% of asylum cases get granted positively. And just to add this for the viewers, to receive asylum in the United States, the international law definition and the U.S. definition is you have to have a well-founded fear of persecution on account of your race, your religion, your nationality, your political opinion, or your social group. So these are people who are facing very serious threats, and an incorrect decision on one of these claims can, as the prior speaker just said, lead the person who is then removed from the United States to threats to their life. So it's a very serious concern when we see such a great difference between the asylum cases in the immigration courts all across the country, and Atlanta as a much more hostile to immigrants court.
Yeah, that is an enormous statistical difference. Lisa Grable with the Southern Poverty Law Center, according to the research that you've done on this topic, what is behind this? Is it just that the judges at the Atlanta Immigration Court are handling these cases differently, or are they getting different types of cases that would therefore naturally require a different outcome?
We have no reason to think that they're getting different types of cases. I think in terms of explaining why these particular judges seem to disregard the law, behave so unprofessionally from the bench, demonstrate such disinterest in the standards, it's my understanding from other advocates that there's a culture on the Atlanta immigration bench in the court that has existed for a number of years, and that this is a continuation of that problem. I will say that after we submitted our letter of complaint in early March, I had the opportunity to meet with officials from the Executive Office of Immigration Review, which is the supervising entity of immigration judges. And they explained to us that they had done some, quote, retraining of both the judges and the staff at the Atlanta Immigration Court. However, at that same meeting, a longtime immigration advocate who'd been practicing in the court for many years stood up and volunteered that the same issues had been existing in these particular courts, in the Atlanta Immigration Courts, for decades, and expressed his frustration that despite the apparent attention that EOIR was paying to this complaint, these problems are well known and persistent in the courts.
Is it a couple of really bad apples, like one or two judges who are just real jerks up there, or is it endemic to the entire culture of that particular bench?
Based on our observations, the students, there were six students who observed 45 total sessions over the course of 7 weeks, and our letter of complaint does document particular instances and things that were said by individual judges, but the collective result is the complaint that we filed. So I do not think it can be tied to any particular judge. I think the culture of that bench is the problem.
Let me go back to Adelina Nichols, Executive Director of the Georgia Latino Alliance for Human Rights. Adelina, is what you're hearing here consistent with what you hear from the people you work with?
Yes, absolutely. They don't get a chance. And personally, what we have been there accompanying our members when they have court days, or we have been witness of these. I don't think it's a lack of knowledge, but I think it's an ideology, what you see in present in court.
An ideology on the part of the judges. It's not that they're ignorant. It's not that they don't know what to do. It's not that they're not well-trained. It's that they believe, in your opinion, that the people they're seeing in their court are deserving of a particular type of treatment. And how does that make the people feel when they come before these judges?
Of course, they always is a hope that they have a benefit from the judge. They receive the benefit from the judge. But at the end, we see case by case by case the denial and the concern that it is causing, not only for our community members, but to seek help for a lawyer. Why am I going to look for a lawyer if the judge as well doesn't want to grant an asylum or a benefit to our client? That's a circle that we are in the middle right now.
Mary Ellen Fullerton at the Brooklyn Law School. What recourse is available to people who are in immigration courts and maybe get unfair treatment from a judge?
Well, there are several types of complaints or appeals that can be filed, but I'd like to preface my response by putting this in a somewhat larger context.
Sure.
The Constitution of the United States, the Due Process Clause of the Constitution, says that every person, not citizen, every person is entitled to fair procedures. And this immigration court, as documented in the report that we're discussing, which I've got to commend the authors for doing something very uniform. So it's looking at all judges in the immigration court for 7 weeks long with standard questionnaires that the observers filled out that helps us go beyond just individual anecdote. So you put that lengthy process, and of course it can be repeated, and I hope it will be, together with the constitutional protection and the fact that since at least the early 2000s, the Atlanta court has been an outlier. There's a famous book in immigration law called Refugee Roulette, published in 2009, at which point the immigration court in Atlanta was I think granting 12% of the cases versus a nationwide average of around 50%. So we have a really big systemic problem. There are a couple of ways to get results, but they are unfortunately costly, and costly not only in terms of money, but in terms of expertise. First of all, if you're denied a case, you can appeal. There's a statutory right to appeal directly to the Board of Immigration Appeals, an administrative body within the Department of Justice and then on to the federal courts of appeals. But that's very hard for people to do. They need lawyers to do that effectively. Language is a huge barrier. This population is very unrepresented. It's also possible to file individual complaints against individual immigration judges with the Department of Justice. And I think that's part of our problem. The structure isn't conducive to the immigration judges being kind of publicly have records about what their complaints might be, what their rates of ethical violations or unprofessional conducts might be. Mm-hmm. So there's a dearth of information so that a larger picture of systemic problem can emerge.
It's on Second Thought, and we are talking about the Atlanta Immigration Court, which, according to a new report by the Southern Poverty Law Center and Emory University, rejects about 98% of the claims for asylum that it sees. That's much, much higher of a rate we see in the immigration court system nationally. Lisa Grable with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Who appoints immigration court judges, and what can be done to remove them from the bench or penalize them in some way if they're doing things that really are inappropriate, as the students who worked on your report documented?
Judges are appointed by the Executive Office of Immigration Review, and generally speaking, it is rare for a judge to be removed. I can't think of a case that I've seen in the time that I've been practicing, although Professor Fullerton might have some more information about that.
So let me clarify that. You're talking it appointed by a federal agency, so ultimately it's the executive branch, it's the White House that's ultimately
correct.
In charge of these things.
Correct. EOIR is part of the U.S. Department of Justice, and it is an executive agency, and they're appointed to the bench. There's no congressional approval or confirmation process or anything like that. This position is an administrative law position and therefore appointed by the executive branch. And as I said, I've never seen an immigration judge removed in the time that in the nearly 20 years I've been practicing law. But I think that I also think that one of the reasons that may be the case is that rarely do immigration courts are open to the public, but especially in detention centers, immigration courts that are in detention centers, there are very rarely people in there as observers. That's why our project with Emory and Professor Lutzen was a little bit unique. Although the courts are open, they often operate in a not transparent manner because they're not subject to very much public scrutiny. So our goal with this project and future projects is to raise the level of awareness in the community about what immigration judges are doing and try to hold them more accountable publicly for their actions.
Yeah, we should say that we invited representatives from Emory to join this conversation, but they declined, citing privacy concerns about the cases that they included in the study. Professor Fullerton, go to you. We know from a lot of reporting that there has been an appreciable and notable culture change, a change in the method of operation in immigration law enforcement, ICE, under the Trump administration compared to the Obama administration. Are we seeing any similar culture shift at the immigration court level?
I think that's too soon to say, but it would be safe to be concerned about that. One thing I wanted to point out that from my reading, and I'm up here in New York, I'm not on the scene at all in Georgia, but from my reading, one of the issues in the Atlanta Immigration Court is that the Atlanta ICE office, the Office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, so the law enforcement part of the immigration world, which brings cases to the immigration court, is known for being an aggressive office that's not open to some of the routine adjustments, such as change of venue to another immigration court if the immigrant moves, that other offices are. So it appears that there's an institutional culture even within the law enforcement part, which then might bleed over into the immigration judges' institutional culture themselves. But back to your question, the Attorney General of the United States has the power to appoint the immigration judges, and frequently, generally, the chief of the Executive Office of Immigration Review within the Justice Department posts announcements, but that doesn't always happen. That didn't happen under Alberto Gonzalez, where political appointees were put into those positions. So I think we should all be watching very carefully and very publicly scrutinize new proposals or nominations for immigration judges.
Last thought, we'll go to Adelina Nichols, Executive Director with the Georgia Latino Alliance for Human Rights. In the 30 seconds that we have left, Adelina, what's the message that you send to the people you work with regard to all of this? Would you say, you know, if you're coming to the United States to seek asylum, don't come to Atlanta?
No, I think that they should be wherever they want to go, but at the same time to raise their voice and in looking for support to fighting the injustices as well.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. We were speaking with Lisa Grable, Deputy Legal Director with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Also, Adelina Nichols, as you just heard, Executive Director with the Georgia Latino Alliance for Human Rights, and Mary Ellen Fullerton, Professor of Law at the Brooklyn Law School. Thank you all three for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for the show today, but we always want to hear from you, listeners. Do you have any experience with judges who show bias in their rulings? It's going to get us a few things. Direct experience, personal experience, firsthand experience, judges being unfair to you. Love to hear some stories about that. Call us at 404-500-9457. That's 404-500-9457. You can also post on Facebook or reach us on Twitter. The show is at OST Talk. Love to hear some personal stories about experiences with bias from judges in the courtroom. First-hand experience. Let's not have any hearsay.